which Buckley suggested in 1905. We used beechwood creosote. We used tamarind paraquinol. We used a number of other medicaments, including silver nitrate, born right here in the city of Boston by Percy Howe. This was ammoniacal silver nitrate. And to make ammoniacal silver nitrate, all you do is to make a solution of silver nitrate. Then you add ammonia water to it, and it, almost at once it becomes black. And you keep on adding enough ammonia, and it will become colorless again. This was ammoniacal silver nitrate. I remember as late as the early 50s lecturing in Oklahoma City, and I was sorry to hear that quite a number of dentists there were still using ammoniacal silver nitrate. Root canals were filled as often as not with cotton saturated with creosote, tamarind, chlorophenol, but mostly phenol. Phenol was looked upon as the final ultra-modern medicament for a number of years. For the simple reason that the FDA was using phenol as a sort of control. Phenol coefficient meant that you compared other medicaments to it. So dentists would saturate cotton in phenol or some other medicament and just stuff the root canal with it. And I can assure you I removed many, many root canal fillings of that kind. Of course, phenol is not, or cotton is not radiopaque, so we had no inkling as to what we would find in the root canal. Sometimes we expected no filling at all. Lead, tin foil, gold foil were still being used by a few dentists, and I remember at a meeting of the American Association of Endodontists in Boston, my friend, whose initials I will just mention, B.W. from San Francisco, showed on a movie how he filled root canals with gold cores. Just imagine trying to fill a root canal with a molar tooth with gold cores. But that's what he did. At any rate, I must come to the main subject of my talk now that I've reminisced, and which is on focal infection. When I was graduated, the very first dental meeting I went to was a debate. The title of the debate was "Resolved that pulpless teeth are a menace to health." And there was a physician and a dentist on the positive side, and a physician and a dentist on the negative side. There is afterward general discussion from the floor, of course, and I can assure you that the debate was heated, and at times the discussion from the floor was also heated, because some of the advocates of the focal infection theory had brought with them two things: either a position who was adamant that Papa's teeth were a menace to health, or else had brought with them out of their vest pocket a slide or two in which someone who had had some systemic disease was cured by the removal of teeth. The focal infection theory was born in Montreal, Canada, in 1910. At that time, William Hunter, a London physician, gave a lecture which made banner headlines in the newspaper, in which he accused infected teeth of almost every ill that one can imagine. Let me read you from a reprint of this paper. The paper is entitled, The Role of Sepsis and of Antisepsis in Medicine. And I am told it was a very emotional talk, and I think you will agree with me that it must have been an emotional talk. He said, no one has probably had more reason than I have had to admire the sheer ingenuity and mechanical skill constantly displayed by the dental surgeon. And no one has had more reason to appreciate the ghastly tragedies of oral sepsis, which his misplaced ingenuity so often carries in its train. Gold fillings, gold caps, gold bridges, gold crowns, fixed dentures built in, on, and around diseased teeth form a veritable mausoleum of gold over a mass of sepsis, to which there is no parallel in the whole realm of medicine and surgery. The whole constitutes a perfect gold trap of sepsis. I speak from experience. The worst cases of anemia, gastritis, colitis of all kinds, of obscure fever of unknown origin, of purpura, of nervous disturbances of all kinds, ranging from mental depression up to actual lesions of the cord, chronic rheumatic affections, of kidney disease, are those which owe their origin to or are gravely complicated by the oral sepsis produced in private patients by these gold traps of sepsis. The medical ill effects of this septic surgery are to be seen every day in those who are the victims of this gilded dentistry. In their dirty gray, sallow, pale, wax-like complexions, and in the chronic dyspepsias, intestinal disorders, ill health, anemias, and nervous complaints from which they suffer. And no class of patients and in no country are these, in my observation, more common than among Americans, and in America, the original home of this class of work. What happened is perhaps what you would expect to happen. The cudgels were taken up by Billings, Rosenau, Hayden, and a host of other physicians, who, when they did not know the cause or cure of a disease, felt that the cause was teeth. Who was William Hunter? I said he was a London physician. How come then that he knows so much about American dentistry? Remember, this is 1910. In the 1910, there was no dental x-ray machine even. According to Howard Redford, who was the first teacher of radiology in this country, and whom I visited in Albuquerque, New Mexico just last year, he's in his 90s now, and with whom I have talked, simply because I didn't go to visit him specifically. Our son lived at that time still in New Mexico. According to Howard Draper, there are not more than a dozen x-ray coils, that is, parts made by physicists for a few dentists in this country. So, he did not see pulpous teeth. Hunter did not see pulpous teeth. What he saw, perhaps, was a few Americans who were visiting in England, and when they opened their mouths at his command, he may have found evidence of tooth debris under and around bridges. In those days, a sanitary bridge was something like this. There was a space between the pontix and the gingiva. And of course, there wasn't as much space as I have shown here, but a small amount of space, with the object of cleaning the undersurface of the bridge. So I presume he saw either food debris or the effects of food debris, namely that the gingival margins were inflamed. Yes? His talk had a great influence on both the professions of medicine and dentistry for a period of about 40 years. Soon afterward, the people at the Mayo Clinic became very much interested in dental focal infection because of work done by E.C. Rosenau. Rosenau was a bacteriologist at the Mayo Clinic, and he did some experimental work, and I have a slide which will show you. I don't know how well you'll be able to see it. It's a slide that I just made before I left. There wasn't time to have a professional slide made. But he developed a theory of elective localization. If, for example, you removed microorganisms from a bad and affected kidney, and you injected these microorganisms into an animal, then the animal would develop that kidney. If, for example, there was a case of osteomyelitis, you injected the animal with the microorganisms, then osteomyelitis. Would develop. Well, this elective localization theory didn't last long. It was disproved. However, he had a great deal of influence on both the medical and dental profession because he was associated with the Mayo Clinic. Hayden is another person who did a great deal of experimental work in this area. And again, I will show you a slide of some of his work, in which he isolated as many microorganisms from X-ray negative teeth, practically, as from vital teeth. Of course, the question arises, why should there be microorganisms in the case of vital teeth? Well, the answer is that this is one of the ways in which the microbiologic research was done at the time. In the hospital, the dental intern would extract the tooth. It would be dropped in a sterile test tube. It was then sent to the laboratory. Well, obviously, even if he did swab the crown surface with an antiseptic, it would not necessarily sterilize the crown surface. And as it went down in the tube, and then as it was sent out of the tube, for the microbiologist in the laboratory to make a culture from the root surface, the root surface had already been contaminated. Another method was to extract the tooth and then to cut off the root tip and drop it in culture medium, which was better, of course. And yet, as Fish and McLean showed in 1936, I think, or 1939, one or the other, that unless you sterilized the gingival sulcus with a red hot cautery. I hope you're acquainted with the work of Fish and McLean. Unless you sterilize the gingival area with a red hot cautery, you're likely to get contamination of the root surface during the extraction of the tooth because the microorganisms in loosening the tooth and rotating the tooth. Microorganisms have created positive and negative pressure. Often the microorganisms were sucked up into the broken blood vessels. So, dental profession began to take stock. And in England, at a dental meeting, one dentist presented four children for whom he removed all deciduous teeth as a preventive measure against focal infection. And perhaps I should, although I'm sure you're acquainted with the difference between foci infection and focal infection, a focus of infection is simply a localized area of infection. Focal infection implies that the microorganism from one site has circulated and established itself in another site of the body. The current dental literature still lists articles dealing with focal infection. For example, in 1972, there were 21 papers listed in Index of Dental Literature. 73, I'm just giving you the statistics during the last 5 years. 1973, there were 20 papers published. 1974, 19. 1975, 23. And 1976, 17 papers published on focal infection. So apparently the focal infection theory is still believed in to a great extent by some. Let me give you the titles of some of these papers, just a half a dozen titles. Possible relationship between dental foci and erythema multiforme. importance of dental infection for focal diseases of the eye. Dental focal infection as an origin of uveitis. Uveitis is an eye infection. The heart and the teeth, risk of infection. Dental infection and digestive pathology, idiopathic genetic correlation. Are dead teeth a health hazard? Almost like the title of the debate that I went to. And finally, tooth infection as a cause of peripheral sepsis. So you see, the focal infection theory hasn't died out altogether. As I said before, it took about 40 years before the focal infection theory died out, more or less. What happened during that period of time at our dental schools? Some schools did not teach root canal treatment at all. Some schools permitted their students to treat anterior teeth. And sorry that I don't recall the date when some of these schools began to treat posterior teeth as well, but I'm reasonably sure that it was not until the middle or late 50s that they began to treat or teach and have the student experience the treatment of posterior teeth as well as anterior teeth. Long about the early 50s, the pendulum began to swing the other way. At our school, for example, Dr. Williams, head of the microbiology department, and Dr. Lester Burkett, who got his MD as well as a DDS degree, wrote a paper in Philadelphia Medicine, which was the official organ of the County Medical Society of the Philadelphia area, and which they stated, the reviewers have found that there is no good scientific evidence to support the theory that removal of these infected teeth and other disorders cure arthritis, rheumatic heart disease, and kidney, eye, skin, and other disorders. On the other hand, it is well to keep in mind that if the focus of infection has been found in the mouth, every effort should be made to remove the infection as a general hygienic measure. And with this, I concur absolutely. And someone who had an MD, who had once been associated with the Mayo Clinic, wrote in 1952, many years ago, I wrote a protest against the then very popular practice of recklessly extracting teeth. At that time, the idea of focal infection was at its height, and no matter what a person had, cancer, leukemia, psoriasis, or a broken leg, not only were all his devitalized teeth removed, but sometimes all his good ones went out with the bag. Often, there was little sense to the procedure, but we physicians have always been great drivers of hobbies, and whenever we found a procedure or a drug that helped in cases of one disease, we promptly tried it out on everyone who came into the office. It was interesting recently to find an issue of the Journal of the American Dental Association devoted to a protest of this sort of thing. Actually, the dentists have always been more sensible than we physicians about this type of supposedly therapeutic extraction of teeth. They have not been stampeded, and they have kept urging moderation. Then, in, that was in 52, and in 52 also, there's an article in the Triple O Journal of August by a physician. Several weeks ago, a young lady of 24 years had been referred because of sudden blindness in her left eye of 18 hours duration. During her visit, she mentioned the presence of a devitalized left upper tooth. She was advised to have it removed, which she did. In the brief span of 2 hours, her vision returned to normal and the blinded eye. So blinded were some physicians about the focal infection theory, but this is the kind of report that hit the journals. The Journal of the American Medical Association, Medical Association of 1952 is a bit more sane, and in an editorial it said, after exerting a tremendous influence on the practice of medicine for a generation, the theory of focal infection in the past 10 or 15 years has fallen in part into disfavor. This has been due partly to the excesses and abuses that have been committed in its name, and partly to the following observations that seem to discredit it. One, many patients with diseases presumably caused by foci of infection have not been relieved of their symptoms by removal of the foci. Two, many patients with these same systemic diseases had no evident focus of infection. And three, foci of infection are, according to some statistical studies, as common in apparently healthy persons as in those with disease. Then along about the middle 50s, Jowitz, a microbiologist on the Pacific Coast, and some of you may be acquainted with his textbook on microbiology, wrote a paper entitled The Rise and Fall of Focal Infection, and so on. So that you would think that in 1977, there wouldn't be any physicians, hopefully there wouldn't be any dentists, who still held on to the theory of focal infection. But as you can gather from what I just read you, a half dozen or so papers that appeared during the last 5 years, there are some who still cling tenaciously to the focal infection theory. Now may I have the next slide, please? I promise I'll get you out by 12 o'clock. Certainly caused a lot of trouble in the both medical and mental professions by his oral sepsis focal infection theory. And the next slide, one of the papers, as you can see, I think this was published by Hayden, 46% of vital teeth yielded growth of microorganisms. This in itself should have invalidated the experiment. But no, if you add these figures up, you can readily see that I suppose they should come to 54%. They don't, I quickly just noticed, but at any rate, the fact is that a large number of vital teeth yielded microorganisms because the research design was imperfect. The next slide. This is from Rosenau, and as you can see, appendicitis, ulcer of the stomach, cholecystitis, myositis, yes, acute poliomyelitis. 46 cases resulting from the injection of microorganisms, namely streptococci. The next slide. Also, in the current little work in a dog, these stones were the result of cultures from the urine of a patient with nephrolithiasis. In other words, backing up his elective localization theory. It's hard to believe that the microorganisms would cause these kidney stones. The next slide. Well, Death in Dentistry was a book which I hope you have in your library. If not, it's worth getting as a good indication of what it was like to practice root canal treatment in those days. Martin Fisher was not a dentist, he was a physician. He was a pathologist, as a matter of fact, in Cincinnati. And he wrote this book called Death in Dentistry, and I'll read you just a few paragraphs from his book. The next slide, please. In our opinion, nearly everything, referring to Dennis, of course, nearly everything he has been doing is wrong, for it turns out that with scarce an exception, every one of the two saving devices that he has engendered is wrong in principle. They must, in consequence, be given up. It means that the following are of the past. All his dental revitalizations, root canal fillings, pivot teeth, root amputations, fixed bridges, crowns, larger inlays, tooth straightening procedures employing such schemes, too rapid movement of teeth, undercut fillings, other kinds if large, and finally, it must be said softly, all fillings. This leaves to him for future endeavor only the gentler forms of dental prophylaxis, the most superficial types of filling, if any, the mechanical cleansing of carious areas with the maintenance of physiological drainage in them, the wide open evasion of pulp chambers if infected, and the extraction of teeth and proper aftercare. The next slide. It follows by corollary that if the rotted foundations described need of themselves to be removed, anything built upon them is doomed to crash. The following types of restoration are wrong in principle and destined for limbo. And so he goes all kinds of dentistry. We used to say the hook, meaning out with it. The next slide. You can imagine what a book of that kind, what impression a book of that kind would have on the dental profession. Dr. Kollner was an internist, and this is just table three of three tables in which he lists the diseases due to, it should be foci of infection, or no, focal infection of dental arch, and that's correct. As you can see, name it, and you can have it. Just about everything. The next slide. Is it any wonder that patients would come to a dentist and say, I want my teeth out, because that patient perhaps had arthritis or something of the sort. Alopecia areata is baldness. His alopecia cleared out promptly on scaling his teeth. Well, I've had my teeth scaled many times, but my baldness hasn't cleared up, unfortunately. The next slide. But this was the kind of case report that appeared in the throwaway dental journals. In this case, it happens to be a rash that covered the body of a 13-year-old boy, failed to respond to ultraviolet ray treatment. Tests indicated the presence of a focus of infection, and so on. Reports that 3 weeks after extraction of the tooth, the skin was completely clear. So, the next slide. Well, it also hit the newspapers. Dear Abby, if I told you how much my husband and I wanted a baby, you wouldn't believe it. We've both been going to doctors for 8 years, and they say there's absolutely nothing wrong with either one of us. We've tried every suggestion we've ever heard of from friends and doctors, but so far, no luck. My doctor says there's only one thing left for me to try, and that is having all my teeth pulled. I never had any trouble with my teeth, and I'm only 27, but if it's causing my trouble, I'm willing to do it. Have you ever heard that this would help? Well, she replies, I don't know what kind of doctor you're consulting, but I urge you not to have all your teeth pulled until you've seen another doctor, etc. This gives you an idea, perhaps, what it meant to try to practice endodontics some 30, 40, 50 years ago. I can assure you that I had more than one tiff with an ophthalmologist or a nose and throat man. If, for example, the patient had some eye condition that the ophthalmologist was not treating successfully, he insisted that there must be a focus of infection in the mouth. And a single track mind of a single track that went from the tooth straight up to the eye. And if there was a patient with chronic sinusitis, again, the nose and throat man wanted the patient's posterior maxillary teeth out. The next slide. Now for some experimental work. Well, this shows that 1971, again, a case of focal infection reported. The next slide. However, when it comes to subacute bacterial endocarditis, we prefer to treat rather than extract the tooth today. Again, on an Australian dental journal, I don't remember the date, but fairly recently, are dead teeth a health hazard? The next slide. Okay, Rhodes and Dick published a paper in which they found that there were many more colonies of microorganisms in x-ray negative pulpless teeth, the solid line, as compared with x-ray negative teeth with vital pulse, the broken line. Quite impressive, is it? It doesn't impress me, because they stop right there in following through. But then there's another reason. The next slide. From the standpoint of tooth distribution, there were more molar teeth with areas of rarefaction in the experiment than anterior teeth. On the other hand, in the controls, there are fewer molar teeth as compared with anterior teeth. So, pulpless teeth having the highest bacteria counts were all molars. And almost half of the pulpless teeth gave lower counts than the vital teeth with the highest count. Dick is the same person who did the big test. Okay, next slide. Big test for a disease which is no longer, I'll think of it later. Deferrin, right, which is no longer a problem. All right, on the left-hand side, we have pulpus teeth, the right-hand side, metal teeth. Again, in each of these columns. Work done by Burkett, work done by Hayden, and work done by Rose now. And the question is, why should there be, why should microorganisms be present in vital teeth? Vital teeth, 55% here, 51% here, 43% in the case of Burkett's study. Well, the answer is that these teeth were extracted and the digital sulcus was not sterilized. The next slide. So, without significance. Genbrich at Yale did a very interesting experiment with 15 monkeys. He sealed Streptococcus viridans in pulp cavities. Radiolucenaries developed in half of the teeth. Cultures of Streptococcus viridans were recovered in 77% of these teeth at a later time. From a systemic standpoint, quoting, Gross, in histologic examination of the viscera, alimentary tract, joints and nervous system showed no changes that could be related in any way to the infection produced in the teeth, end of quote. The next slide. Bernier did an interesting experiment. He went through the gingiva and bone, and with the trocar and cannula. He removed the trocar and then kept the cannula in place from which to take cultures. And with the trocar and cannula method, he found 76% of vital teeth were negative and 24% were positive. Of course, he did not sterilize in the sense of actually destroying the mucosa. It would have been necessary for him to use a cautery of some type to do this. Instead, he used a chemical disinfection, which we know is not altogether effective. Now, these same teeth were extracted, and cultures are taken from the root apices. 92% vital teeth show growth of microorganisms. So that, again, it bears out what Fish and Cunningham learned from their experiments. The next slide. Kiesel resected pulpus teeth. And he took a control culture from the mucosa and lingual plate of bone. The root apex was removed, crushed to a powder, shaken with culture media. Of 12 cases, all 12 were negative on a microbiological basis. The next slide. Gunther was a physician and a dentist as well. He was head of oral surgery at our school. Appleton was head of the microbiology department. They used the interdental method. And I played a minor role in this project. I provided the patients and watched the work being done. And at any rate, the surface of the throughout, because the head of the bacteriology department was present and kept tabs, as aseptic as a technique as possible was carried out. The area was swapped first before the rubber dam was applied. And the rubber dam was applied, and that area was swabbed well with an iodine solution. And then the enamel was penetrated with a sterile burr, but the material was not safe. Then a fresh sterile burr was used and penetrated the dentine. the then team just was saved, and in 41 out of 42 cases, the control culture was negative. The pulp tissue then was removed with a sterile burr and cut off with a pair of sterile scissors and dropped in a culture tube. And in those days, we used to use a brain heart infusion broth, which has low oxygen tension as well as normal oxygen tension. The pulp tissue then, in 42 cases, was negative. But these same teeth were then extracted, the root apices were cut off with a pair of sterile forceps, and in 42 out of 42 cases, positive. The next slide. Tudor Clifton Hammond, I figured I'll last day at that time, extracted teeth. The teeth were soaked in phenol for 15 minutes. They were washed in alcohol. They were then flamed. They were soaked in alcohol for 15 minutes and flamed again. Now, the object was to sterilize the surfaces of the teeth. And in 100% of cases, 30 teeth, all control cultures were negative. The pulps were then removed of the same teeth. And 67% were negative, 33% were positive. How did the pulps become infected? Well, they became infected because of the circulating